Thank you, Honorable Nkatimeng. Honorable Nkatimeng has nominated Honorable Teddy to be the acting chairperson. Is there any seconder? I recognize Honorable Kekana.
Thank you, sir. My name is Maisela David Kekana. I second the nomination of Honorable Teddy.
Thank you, Mr. Kekana. Are there any further nominations? Honorable members, without waiting any time, I will therefore invite Mr. Teddy to come forward and take the chair. Thank you very much.
Good morning, honorable members, colleagues from the department, Film and Publications Board, from the media houses present here. You are warmly welcomed. The adoption of the minutes of the 16th of February, can we attend to that item? Immediately after the main item, briefing by the Department of Communications on the Film and Publications Amendment. Can I get concurrence from the honorable members if we can do it the other way around? I see Honorable Pandey.
Chairperson, before we start this, I don't know if I'm the only one hearing the firing outside. It's really quite disturbing. Can we find out what that is and can it be stopped?
No, I'm advised it's for NCOP members.
Oh.
Yeah, it will stop at any minute or so. I was just saying I will need concurrence from honorable members if we can do it the other way around. Attend to minutes of the 16th of February 2016, immediately after the presentation of the Department of Communications on the Film and Publications Amendment Bill. Agreed? Okay. Thanks. The following are the apologies. Of course, Honorable Chairperson Jason Loimurupa is on leave. I'm told Honorable Ndongeni is attending communications with Honorable Zoltek, who will also be joining us during the course of the meeting. Honorable Madisha, I'm told, is attending party caucus. Honorable Joseph, organizational work. The minister is not well. And Honorable Van Dyke, I'm told, she's running late. Is he here? Okay. Any other apologies? Seemingly not. Once more, colleagues, you are warmly welcomed. We are meeting in the main to receive presentation by the department on the film and on the Films and Publications Amendment Bill. A very important process that all of us will have to attend to. Of course, this particular matter comes at a very opportune time, when there's been call in the recent month for us to attend to this particular issue, given concerns that has been raising, that have been raised when people have been abusing the social media space. We hope this particular matter that we are dealing with will definitely assist us to be able to attend to this issue head on. Without any waste of time, I will then afford the opportunity to the department to go straight to the presentation, and then members will then engage with the presentation. Over to the
good morning, honorable members. Let me start by introducing the delegation from the Department and Foreign Publication Board who are here today. My name is Norman Njayare, acting DG of the Department of Communications. I'm with Ndate Colin Mashile, the Chief Director of Policy, sitting next to the computer there. And also the TV Director of Legal Services, Tate Kayale Tuhusha, is sitting there. We also have the colleagues from the Films and Publications Board who are with us. Here is the CEO, Tate Temba Wakashe, is the CEO of the board. Sipori Siva, sitting next to me here, who is the COO of the Film Publication Board. We also have a council member, Advocate Funane Vondo. I've seen him coming in. Yes, sitting there. Indeed, Chair, we are here to brief the committee on the proposed amendments to the Films and Publications Amendment Bill. We are doing so knowing for a fact that South African online environment has over the years evolved quite significantly. We now have a significant number of people who access online content using various methods. And knowledge differ quite remarkably than just a few years ago. The profile of those who are in the digital space has changed dramatically. The ubiquity of smartphones and availability of cheaper tablets means that the online user is becoming younger and younger. Therefore, it requires that we also adapt our regulations and laws to be able to respond to that changing user in the online space. As government, we are also aware of the enormous opportunities that the online presents, and as such, we are committed to ensuring that as many people as possible experience the transformative capabilities of the online environment. In as much as we embrace the dynamism of the online environment, we remain acutely aware of the risks, security, and privacy that come with the digital platforms. For policy to remain an effective instrument, it has to adapt to this changing reality. This is in the main the reason behind the proposed amendment, Honorable Chairperson and members, in terms of how do we regulate content and the usage of content online. Precisely the FPB, which is the Film and Publication Board, which falls under the Department of Communication, has been working hard to safeguard the online content and internet users. Honorable Chair, without wasting much time, I will go straight into the purpose of the bill, and I think my colleague Tate Mashile will take over from the slide that follows. The bill seeks to align with international best practice on matters regarding to regulation of distribution of online content. It further seeks to strengthen efforts to combat online distribution of illegal content as defined in the Film and Publications Act 65/1996. It also seeks to establish core regulation regime for classification of digital content which is distributed online, and also to amplify responsibilities of internet service providers in matters regarding the protection of consumers and children against sexual content, hate speech, racism content, and user-generated content. I must say, Honorable Chair and members, did you, we have the same document, all of us? We got the same document.
Okay. Because I see some of the issues that you are raising, I don't have them yet. But it's fine, yeah, you can proceed. It does not look like we are referring to the same document that you are presenting.
This one seems to be the same as the one that I have.
Is it?
Yeah, this one.
Okay.
The one that was separated.
No.
Yeah. So I think I will move to slide number 3. That this process, I must say, it started way in 2012, this process of the amendment, necessitated by, in May 2012, the appeal tribunal ruled against the FPB in the classification of the film called The Spear. I think we have seen the complaints that come as a result of that. And also in 2012, there was a constitutional ruling which declared Section 16.2 of the Act to be unconstitutional. And in 2013, that the appeal tribunal found the regulations of the Act dealing with the process of handling child pornography not aligned to the constitutional case of the RIP and a rule against the FPB. In the recent years, there has been a proliferation of posting and uploading private sex video and videos depicting violence on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. In the next slide, slide number 4, the bill seeks to address the shortcomings in relation to classification, compliance, monitoring, and usage of new media and social networking sites. It also seeks to align certain definitions to various judgments of the Constitutional Court that I've referred to earlier in the earlier slides and the Appeals Tribunal. It also seeks to establish a penalty committee to address public complaints and administrative offences committed by distributors and industry, and also provides for the accreditation of foreign classification systems online. I will now, Honorable Chair and members, hand over to Ntate Mashile to do the technical presentation on the suggested amendment, section by section. I hand over to you, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Members, DG, and colleagues. In terms of suggested amendments, Section 1 of the bill inserts and amends certain definitions as outlined below. The definition of artistic has been revised to mean predominantly aesthetic, according to the reasonable person. The definition of child pornography has been revised by the deletion of the word include or in such a manner that is capable of being used for the purposes of sexual exploitation. In terms of definitions, again, definitions of penalty committee, press council, press ombudsman, and social media have been added. The definition of publication has been revised to include website. The definition of social conduct has been revised by the deletion of mail with reference to genitals and the addition of all those words. In terms of Section 2, Honorable Chair, the object of the Act has been revised by the substitution of the following paragraph, subsection D, criminalize the possession, production, and distribution of child pornography in order to extensively provide for the protection of children against child pornography. And the insertion of paragraph, subsection E, in order to create offenses for non-compliance with the classification decisions of the FPD. In terms of Section 6, Chair, it has been revised with the inclusion of penalty committee and provision regarding the membership and required experience of the members of that penalty committee. And then Section 7, 8, and 9 of the Principal Act has been revised with the inclusion of reference to the same penalty committee. In terms of Section 9A, it has been amended by making provision for accreditation of foreign classification systems, the conclusion of foreign distribution agreements, and the exemption of online distributors from the pre-distribution classification requirements in relation to films, games, and publications. And then in terms of Section 12, 13, and 14, these sections, which deals with the remuneration expenditure and the annual report respectively, have been amended with the inclusion of the reference to the penalty committee. Section 15A, this section has been amended in order to clarify the manner in which compliance officers must act upon entering premises and further make provisions for the deployment of police officers. Section 15B establishes an independent penalty committee responsible for investigating and adjudicating over all cases of non-compliance with any provisions of the Act. Section 16, Chairperson, magazines and any other advertisements falling within the jurisdiction of the ASA are exempted, and the classification provided for in subsection 2 must be dealt with timely in order to avoid any unreasonable delays. Section 4, subsection B has been revised to refer only to explicit violent sexual conduct, bestiality, incest or rape, explicit infliction of domestic violence, explicit visual presentation of extreme violence. This section no longer includes child pornography or material classified as 18. In terms of Section 18, subsection 3, subsection B has been revised to remedy the vagueness thereof, which resulted in the provision being deemed to be unconstitutional. Consequently, it only makes reference to explicit violent sexual conduct in order to distinguish between the double X category from the F18 voluntary sex category. These are the classifications. This subsection further omits child pornography from exemption. Subsection 6 excludes broadcasters which are subject to regulatory authority of ICASA. Streaming content through internet is not regarded as broadcasting, and to this end, subsection 7 has been inserted. In terms of section 18A and 18B, these sections which deal with the display of classification decision and reclassification have been deleted. And then in terms of section 18C, this section makes provision for independent classification of digital films, games, and publications by distributors of online content who are registered with the FPP. In terms of section 18D, the FPP may recognize a foreign classification system upon application by an online distributor, subject to alignment of the foreign ratings to the FPP's classification guidelines and payment of the prescribed fees, as outlined in the Act. And in terms of Section 18E, members of the public may lodge complaints to the FPP regarding unclassified, prohibited content or potential prohibited content distributed online. The FPP may issue a takedown notice, a service cessation notice, or a link deletion notice. In the event that such content contains child pornography, the FPP must refer the matter to the SAPS or helpline in the country concerned where the content is hosted outside the geographical borders of South Africa. In terms of Section 18F, It is an offense to distribute private sexual photographs and films with the intention of causing that individual distress in an electronic medium, including on the internet and social networking sites, without the consent of the individual who appears in such photographs or films. The only circumstances under which such disclosure may be made is where it is necessary for the purposes of preventing, detecting, or investigating a crime. In terms of Section 89, only content which has been classified may be distributed in South Africa, and such content must clearly display the classification decisions. In terms of Section 18J, members of the public may apply for a less restrictive classification for content after a period of 2 years from when the content was initially classified. Furthermore, any aggrieved member of the public may apply for reclassification of content, and the distributor will be afforded the opportunity to make representation in response thereof. Section 19, Chairperson, the minister has been removed as a potential complainant and appellant in light of the fact that it is the same minister who appoints the appeal tribunal and the council, which in turn appoints the CEO in consultation with the minister. Consequently, any person may lodge a complaint with the FPB regarding a classification decision. The minister has been removed as a in terms of Section 20, the minister has been removed as a potential complainant for the same reasons as outlined above. Consequently, as indicated, any person may lodge a complaint with the FPB regarding classification decision. A distributor who is a member of the industry classification body cannot appeal decisions of that body to the appeal tribunal. In the event that FPB imposes a more onerous classification upon application of reclassification as envisaged in Section 18G, then the distributor may appeal to the appeal tribunal. In terms of Section 24, Chair, F18 material may be distributed online by a registered distributor, provided that the FPB is satisfied that the distributor has mechanisms in place to ensure that the material will not be distributed to children under the age of 18, and the classification details are clearly displayed throughout the screening thereof. Furthermore, the distributor must keep a register of all users, and the register must be made available to the CEO where he has reason to believe that the distributor is in contravention of the conditions set above, the CEO of the FPB. The exemption afforded to the distributor may be suspended for a minimum period of 12 months where the distributor is found to be in contravention of this section. In terms of Section 4A, the maximum fine has been specified and the maximum period of imprisonment has been extended to 8 months. Subsection 2 exempts broadcasters which are subject to the regulatory authority of ICASA, and newspapers, magazines, or advertisements which are subject to the regulatory authority of the press ombudsman. Subsection 3 now makes provision for material which would have been classified as 18 had it been submitted for classification, and further provide for the monetary amount of the fine. Subsection 4 omits the exemption for science, literary, or artistic merit and aligns it with the provision of Section 18 with the addition of the words which would have justified an X18 classification. Section 24B, the maximum fines and the maximum period of imprisonment have been specified. Section 24C, the maximum amount for the fine has been specified. Section 24G has been inserted and provides that any person who provides the FPB with false information on its online system will be guilty of an offense and liable upon conviction to a maximum fine of 15,000 or imprisonment for a maximum period of 6 months or both. terms of section 24E, this section has been inserted and provides that any person who knowingly distributes private sexual photographs and films without the prior consent of the individual appearing in the said films and photographs with the intention to cause such individual distress shall be guilty of an offense and liable upon conviction to a fine not exceeding 150,000 or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years or both. In terms of section 224F, this section has been inserted and provides that any person who knowingly creates, produces or distributes in any electronic media, including the internet and social networking sites, any film or photograph which contains depictions or scenes of sexual assault and violence against children shall be guilty of an offense and liable upon conviction to a fine not exceeding 150,000 or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years or both. Section 24G has been inserted and provides that any person who knowingly distributes any film or game which advocates propaganda for war, incites violence, or advocates for hatred based on race, ethnicity, gender, or religion, and that constitutes incitement to cause harm, shall be guilty of an offense and liable upon conviction to a fine not exceeding 150,000 or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years or both. For section 25, the heading has been amended to internet, extraterritorial jurisdictions, and presumptions of proof, and the rest of the chapter has been amended accordingly. In terms of section 30, subsection 4 thereof, which provides for a fine by agreement, has been repealed in light of the introduction of the penalty committee in section 15B. And then lastly, section 31, subsection 3, subsection B, repeals reference to the SPB and replaces it with a reference to the council, which shall be responsible to publish the classification guidelines in consultation with the Minister of Communication. Thanks, DJ.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. That concludes our presentation, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Honorable members, there is a presentation. Now is the time for us to engage with the presentation. Obviously, the presenter will appreciate the fact that when we engage, some of the issues will be on the basis that the presentation is designed in such a way that it's like it's a follow-up meeting. It does not necessarily indicate where do we come from and the direction that we are taking as of now. But it's up to members to engage with the presentation. As I've indicated, and I want to start the debate before I have seen Honorable Van Dames, and I want to start with the, I'm told there's been public participation that has been done in the past. Are we able to provide the committee with the outcome so that as and when we engage with this amendment, we are then able to take into consideration some of the issues that have been raised in the past by other stakeholders in that regard. Related to that one is the issue of the exclusion of magazines from the classification. If you can just try and expand a little bit. And lastly, is the removal of the minister as a potential complaint what has been the situation as of now. I've noted Honorable Van Damme, and then the other members will then follow.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for that presentation. I've got a series of questions, and the first one is procedural. So there are two ways in which a bill can be introduced to Parliament in terms of Rule 241. So the first one is you publish a draft bill. The draft bill is contains a notice for public comments, or you publish an explanatory summary. And in terms of those rules, there's no requirement for public consultation. Now, the Department of Communications chose to publish an explanatory summary and there wasn't public consultation. Why did you choose that route? Surely a bill that has implications for many industries should have been subjected to thorough public consultation. And Chair, I think you're incorrect. There wasn't public consultation on this bill. There was public consultation on the policy. This is not the policy, this is the draft bill, and there hasn't been public consultation. So as the situation stands now, in terms of Rule 249, it is now up to the committee to decide whether or not there should be public consultation, and I hope that the committee will agree that there needs to be public consultation, but I need to know from the department why, and the FPP, why you didn't think it was necessary to do thorough public consultation on this bill before you brought it to us. And then a number of substantive issues. Okay, so there are a couple of issues that are to be welcomed. The issue relating to revenge porn and child pornography, it's great that you know, you've included those issues in the bill. The language could be tightened up a little bit, but that's something that the committee could work should work on. Otherwise, the way it's worded right now, it could be open to abuse. It's not very clear, so we just need to tighten the language related to child pornography and revenge porn. And then our problems with the bill. The penalty committee. Now, the minister has all sorts of powers related to the FPB. She appoints the council. She publishes regulations. Surely, the penalty committee, a body that has the power to hand out fines of up to 150,000, that has the power to recommend that the NPA conduct criminal investigations. Surely, that body should be completely independent and should be appointed in consultation with Parliament, and not just politicians, and not the minister, and not cabinet. Otherwise, it runs the risk of being used as a political hit squad. Particularly during elections, for example, the matter of race is always used as political football, and the FPB runs the risk of being used to set their political scores during elections. So it's important that the penalty committee is completely independent and appointed by Parliament and not by politicians. And also related to that, there's a section in the bill that says that the penalty committee cannot make its decisions unless the representation from the CEO. That once again opens the door to abuse and opens up to creating the impression that the CEO could be used to further specific political agendas. Surely the penalty committee should not be subjected to representations and the input of the CEO. It should conduct its work completely independent, without the influence of any politicians or administrative staff. And then the other problem is the proposed amendments related to ICASA and ICASA not being able to renew broadcasting licenses of broadcasters that also stream content on the internet. Surely the FPB is here and now overstepping its boundaries and going into the remit of ICASA. ICASA is a constitutionally established institution. The FPB shouldn't be trying to usurp some of its powers. So what's the thinking behind the bill trying to usurp some of ICASA's powers? Okay, those are my questions for now. There may be more a little bit later. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Van Damme. Any other input or clarification question from the IC? A hand from another honorable member.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Marion Shin. I'm an alternate member of the DA on this committee. there are a couple of things that bothered me. First of all, the definition of autistic, I think, is going to keep a lot of lawyers very happy and good for a very, very long time. I think it radically needs to be reworked. I wanted to know on this, let me go through all of this. The bill seeks to align with international best practice. Can we have some input from the department on what international best practice was consulted? Was it the ITU? Was it the OECD? Was it the European Union? And in particular, what child rights NGOs and experts were consulted on this? Because there's a very heavy emphasis on child pornography here. Also, I noted that on the committee itself, there's no mention of any person having to have specific skills or experience in the field of children's rights, which I think is an omission, and should perhaps be considered thoroughly. I also wanted to know what informed the committee, the penalty committee's qualification that you had to have 10 years experience. This is a very young and dynamic field, and some of the best experts may not have 10 years experience of maybe the best people in the world to advise. Can you have some idea of what advised the 10 years experience? And in section 3.4e says that the council should be independent, but it doesn't say independent of what. To be truly independent, I think it must say that it's independent of political and commercial interference, as just as a starter. I think we need clarity on how deep that independence goes. Yes, also section 15A, when it talks about the functions of the client officers, and the ability to dive into people's premises to extract material. As it makes no mention of court order. Is this going to be necessary? I hope it is, because search and seizure surely has to be accompanied by a thorough motivation that is supported by the courts. Yeah, that'll do for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. With me, when the DG was presenting, or maybe before that, he should have indicated to us that this bill has been, the public hearing has been done before. I thought it is coming to us for the first time. It is presented to the committee whereby we are still going to allow the public to submit their suggestions and after that come again and present to the portfolio committee. I thought the process is still going to go that route. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think the department will clarify that particular aspect when the any other input. Can they deal with the issue that has been raised for now? And then we'll come to the second page of questions that there will be.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. As I said, I have a team of people who are going to assist with responding to some of the questions that has been raised in here. I just deal with the issue of procedure, which was raised earlier on. I indicated when I started that this process started in 2012, during the fourth administration. During that process, the way number of studies which were done, independently done so, and the way also developments which happened in the legal space around the Constitutional Court, the matters and the appeals and all of those things. think also during that process, there was a process which the FPB and the department at the time, which was Home Affairs, engaged in a process of public consultation, wherein members of the industry made representations on the proposed amendments. Also, there was also a team which was constituted, made of a task team which has been set up, made of independent people who assisted in that process. So that process, was taken through that process. And also the involvement of the state law advisors in the process has been quite extensive in that process. I think the colleagues from FPD can always add around that. And our take on this, when we brought the bill here after approved by cabinet in August last year, was to get it in the parliamentary process, which the committee, in its own wisdom, can also decide on how to want to process the bill further, which can also include, if it's not satisfied, also include calling for public to make inputs into the process. So the issue of the public process, I think, has to be further enriched if the committee feels that it needs to do that. But I think from our side, we have done the consultations, and we were satisfied that the consultations have taken us this level. I think the other issue, I think we welcome the suggestions around the child pornography areas. That's the other thing we need to improve on. To give clarity, we will do so in a separate way. Can I then ask the CEO of FPD to or CIPO to deal with the specific matters, and then Colin, you can also add on the specific section that is the members are asking. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Good morning, members, and thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG. I'll start with the first question around the penalty committee and the submission that the minister has a lot of powers. Members will remember that in terms of the current act, council members are appointed by the minister. So what we are introducing is nothing new, not a new regime whatsoever. It is a tradition, it is a process that is already recognized in terms of the current act. What we have done, we have introduced this penalty committee. And I think I must also emphasize that the purpose of this committee, if you look at the current act, in terms of the penalty regime, it only makes provision for criminal sanctions. So now, you can imagine if we were to refer each and every offense to SAPS for investigation and prosecution, that obviously will be draconian. There are administrative offences which, in our view, we believe that can be dealt with efficiently and then obviously without the having to refer to the judicial process for each and every. Like, for example, if there's a distributor at a cinema mistakenly use a wrong age rating, a matter like that, we do not believe something that should be taken to SAPS. But it's a matter, it is a contravention in terms of the act. It must be dealt with, and we believe that matters like that need to be dealt with administratively. So this penalty committee is being proposed to deal with this type of matters. So now, you must also understand that it being a process, it means that the rules of literal justice must be followed. Hence, a reference is made in terms of representation being made before a decision can be reached. And I think it's important that when we interrogate some of these issues, we stick to the literal interpretation of the act, because I feel that we are reading in provisions that are not there. There's nowhere in the act where it says the committee, this penalty committee, cannot make a decision unless the CEO has directed or influenced them otherwise. There's nowhere where the mention of that is made. What the section on this finance committee is saying that the Film and Publication Board will have an opportunity to make representation. Obviously, the CEO, as the head of the institution, will then delegate in terms of who is the person who will appear before this committee and put the FEB's case forward. Similarly, if there is a respondent, that person will be afforded an opportunity to come and appear before this penalty committee so that it can then have the benefit of both sides before a decision can be made. Secondly, I would, on the issue of what is the reason behind the FEB accepting ICASA's powers, I think it's also important that we clarify this to say that you must understand that within the regulatory space that we operate, there are certain entities that we have an overlapping mandate with. When it comes to child pornography, for example, we work closely with us. When it comes to the work of compliance monitors, obviously, SAFs play a role. And if you take, for example, the role of SAFs insofar as the compliance monitoring activities, to us, these are priority cases. And whereas you find that SAFs have their own programs and priority insofar as dealing with other matters. So for that, it was important that the role of SAFs be clarified. When you look at the provisions that are being proposed in terms of trying to draw a distinction between streaming and broadcasting, you then appreciate that we have an overlapping mandate as the FEB together with ICASA. As you know, that when it comes to broadcasters, it is ICASA that authorizes and issues licenses. But when it comes to streaming, it is now the FEB that is responsible for that type of content and also all matters that relate to regulation. So therefore, we have an overlapping mandate. So it was therefore important that these matters be clarified so that the role of each entity can be specified so that there's no confusion. There was no attempt whatsoever on the part of the team or council to assert the powers of ICASA, because then if one were to accept that statement, so therefore means that in section 15A, where a reference is made to the role of SAFs, it means you are trying to usurp the powers of SAFs, and that cannot be correct. The suggestion that this penalty committee must be appointed by Parliament, I don't know what the basis for that, but at a practical level, I don't think that is feasible. And I think perhaps it's for this committee to make such a call. The reasons why, in terms of the qualifications, there's a question to say what informs the 10 years, given that this is a young industry. I think it's to ensure credibility of enterprise decision making. And we propose that the person to chair this penalty committee must be an advocate, a lawyer, or a magistrate with not less than 10 years experience. And in terms of the qualifications of the other members, that is also outlined in section 6A and 6B. I think that's also straightforward. And in terms of the penalties that are being proposed, lastly, we also conducted a study that looked at the penalty regime. And they did a benchmark in terms of the appropriateness of some of the fines. Because I think we must also appreciate that a fine, by its nature, might serve as a deterrent. The current penalty regime in the Act, where someone must consent to be fined 2,000 rand, I mean, that's academic. You might as well not have a penalty regime in the Act. If you are really serious in terms of combating illegal activities, and so far as some of that we are, so the fines must be harsh, and they must have a deterrent so that whoever is thinking of contravening the act then must think twice. And I think those are my submissions. I don't know if I've omitted anything.
Yeah, if you do, I think the council member advocate number 1 to 8.
Yeah, I think I would want to add on what Tito has said. There was a question relating to the international best practice. I think before we do the amendment to this bill, we also consult with other jurisdictions outside South Africa, where we look into the countries where they have a similar process like what the FPD do. The Australian regime also, and the British regime, and also we also look into the American also, and try to benchmark on the best practices on how best we can also regulate this online distribution of online content. And also with regard to the issue relating to the penalty committee, the 10 years experience is the reference is made basically to the chairperson of the Objective Penalty Committee, because it has been a standard practice in tribunals, because the penalty committee will act like a tribunal in South Africa, that the chairperson of that tribunal must have a 10 year experience. But that 10 years of experience will relate much into the practice of law, either as an advocate or an attorney, and also it will also relate to a retired magistrate and also to an academic, a professor or a lecturer at the university who has been in that field for 10 years, but who also have an understanding of children's rights and also laws, which or who understand the mandate of the FTP also at the same time. But the 10 years is basically of practice and a little bit of understanding of that also. And there was an issue with regard to independent of the penalty committee. Surely this penalty committee will be independent, because the penalty committee itself will be independent, because it will comprise of people who are outside the FTP. And they will be appointed, of course, based on their qualification and skill. And their mandate solely is to deal with those cases where there is a contravention of the provisions of the Act. So the committee will be much independent. And there was also an issue of whether the FPB is independent or not. The FPB remain independent, and whatever they do, they are guided by the mandate as envisaged in the Act. So we are always independent on whatever we do, and we are guided by the Act, not by any other influences outside the Act. Thank you.
Mr. Tizzi, you are warmly welcomed. We received your apology earlier on. Panda, your hand up.
Can we do a follow-up?
Yeah. Honorable Van Damme. No, with you is a follow-up. With you is a follow-up. Can you be the last one?
Okay.
Yeah. Honorable Van Damme.
Why?
Yeah,
you can. Thank you, Chairperson. I think, first of all, we need to welcome the presentation and as well as the feedback that has been given based on the previous questions. Based on what the previous speaker said about the penalty committee, I think it's important to include that explanation that you just gave with regards to the 10 years to stipulate that it is going to be only for the chairperson for it, in order for that to be understood properly. In terms of section 24G, on page 23, taking into consideration that all those bases have been named based on race, ethnicity, gender or religion, taking into consideration the current conjuncture that we are faced with, I think it's important that we consider to include also the basis of sexual orientation as well as citizenship
in order to broaden that definition or that provision that has been made. I also appreciate the feedback that has been given with regards to the background, but also to note that everything that happened started in 2012, and taking into consideration it was the fourth parliament and we are now in the fifth parliament. So it would be appreciated if we can get this current committee a summative feedback on all the responses that you received, and perhaps to give us a better insight on the way forward on how you arrived at this current conjunction, and also for us to scrutinize it and see that the process was done previously to abreast us on how you arrived where you are now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Witness, Honorable Gagana, just to revise my list here, Honorable Van Dyke, Honorable Sodeki, Honorable Van Damme, and Honorable Xi. Is that all right? Okay. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by joining the song by welcoming the report. I just want to say that well done to the department and FPP. One thing that I wanted to say is maybe it will be good if you go back and do consultation again, so that when we pass this bill, we don't find ourselves in an awkward corner. And number two, I only just want to recommend on the issue of penalty. 150 and 2 years or both is not a harsh penalty. Sometimes we need to be serious in life. When you do something, someone must not do it, knowing very, very much that there was an example, and the penalty must be too harsh. Maybe not more than 5 years and 250,000 fine or more. Then it's where people will see that we are serious. But if you say 150, I don't think that you are serious. Some people earn that 150,000 a week. So let us just be harsh with take it up. Thank you.
Before I the next speaker, just to qualify on the issue of consultation, I think what honorable members are saying that we appreciate the work that has been done by the department so far. But of course, now if we were to go the route of further consultation, which seems to be a popular view in this committee, there is going to be now a parliamentary process, going to be asked what's going to be in this process. At parliament, if they are with us, they are going to play that supporting role. But it's going to be now a parliamentary process, qualify the issue that has been raised. But as we have indicated, I think we appreciate the work that has been done by the department so far with regard to the amendments that have been tabled now. The next speaker, I think, is Honorable Van Dyke. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Am I
right?
Yes, I'm just trying to see this. My question, broadcasters are exempted from complying with the Film and Publication Board Act in respect of content that is below X rated 18 because of section 192 of the Constitution. In clause 17D of the Film Board and Publication Amendment Bill, it is not proposed that this exemption be further limited in respect of a broadcaster who streams content through the internet and then goes to further things to figure the discretion of the independent regulator contemplated in section 192 of the Constitution when issuing or renewing a broadcasting license or other broadcaster also streams content to the internet. My question here would be with a merger. Firstly, is Amendment Clause 73 constitutional, bearing in mind Section 192 of the Constitution? And then my second part of my question, this clause, in the first place, to my understanding, is unnecessary, as anybody, including a broadcaster, may provide an internet video on demand, VOD, service, as it is not currently a licensable activity in South Africa. So when a broadcaster provides a video on demand service, it is not being done under broadcasting license, as it being or is bi-directional or on demand by the user, and therefore does not fall under the definition of the broadcasting as contained in the EC Act. And even if services offered by the broadcaster, it would not fall under the exemption provided for broadcasting licenses in terms of the Act. So, secondly, I want to know, if streaming content through the internet is not broadcasting, does that then not mean any broadcasters who provide internet online channels are not subject to the broadcasting regulation in respect of those streaming channels?
Thank you, Sir. I heard the response on academic qualifications that the Indian advocate a person with satisfactory legal expertise. But added to that, I think we should also be informed of the requirements such as the code of ethics as to what kind of people are being accepted as members of the panel. Well, we had a situation in the past whereby people in the committee that deal with terrorism and drugs in particular. Also find later on that some of the members of the committee, the particular committee, were implicated in the past, all themselves are drug dealers. So do you vet people to make sure that they are not implicated and have a conflict of interest in this industry? And on the minimum on experience, it seems you could have put down to say 10 years experience, and speaking from experience as well, we came across situations whereby when things do not go right, then we get information as to say we didn't get someone with 10 years of experience. So we had to compromise and take someone with 5 or 7 years experience. Maybe if we should give the wording that is a minimum and maximum experience so that the institution understands this condition in as far as the experience is concerned. And usually taking from experience of the music industry, you know, we have songs which are very derogatory. And only after the song has been sung over and over again, we have a complaint from the public. So what you've been as far as the censorship is concerned, you censor the students before they are being innovated for the public, or you work with a certain institution that does that before we watch this film and thereafter complain. What do you do to prevent such a situation? Thank you.
Now is your turn, Honorable Panda.
Thank you, Chair. Couple more questions. Let's not misleave the public, okay? The question I asked was, was there public consultation on this bill? And the answer is no, there wasn't public consultation on this bill. I am, however, willing to accept, with public consultation on policies, etc., that's fine. I asked if there was consultation on this, and there wasn't. However, I'm willing to accept, since the acting chair has committed that the committee will conduct public consultation process. Am I clear? Am I agreeing to that?
I think that is
a firm
commitment.
Yes. Okay.
Great.
Okay, cool. I'm happy with that. Now, just to respond to some of the answers to my questions, the bill says that the penalty committee shall adjudicate all cases and make appropriate findings after the CEO or his or her representative have made representations. It doesn't say made, it is shall. So it is prescriptive that the CEO must make, shall make presentations. But if you're saying that that was not the intention, maybe the wording in this bill must be changed, but if you're saying that it's a made, not an express requirement. Okay, and then about the independence of the penalty committee. Maybe I wasn't clear in what I said. I said that the minister already has many powers in order to execute the issue, appoints the council and all sorts of other powers. We have a new situation now, we have a new body. I am saying that to prevent the FPDs becoming, I'm not saying it is, becoming an institution that is used to settle political scores, we need to make this new body very, very independent. And the way to do that is to make sure that Parliament is involved in the process of selecting this committee. It's not enough, I'm afraid, to say to us, don't worry, it will be. I need some commitments, I need some legislation that will back that up, because it's 5 years down the line, I can't come to you and say how, but you said, we need some laws. So we'll make sure that this body, with power to hand over fines of 150,000, that's a lot of money. And recommend jail time for 2 years, that's a long time in jail. That body needs to be very independent and we'll make sure that, and I hope that in our engagement as a committee will make sure that safeguards are put in place to make sure that the penalty committee is truly independent. I wanted to leave the discussion about child pornography to when the committee was deliberating, but I think it is important that we are clear to hear from the FPD and from the department what you consider as child pornography. So is it, for example, a film that depicts a child being raped? Does that qualify as child pornography? Or is it an instance where someone films children engaged in sexual acts? So let's just make the distinction between what do we mean by child pornography. So does the we will try and deal with the first instance where it's a movie or a documentary or whatever, or the instance where it relates to children being in sexual acts. And then also, I said that the language in the book about related to revenge porn and child pornography could be a little bit tightened, but I want to take it a step further and ask, is this actually FPD's role to deal with it? Surely it's something that must be dealt with in the Sexual Offences Act, should be dealt with in the justice system and fact. Is it the FPD's role? And also another question about the FPD's role. The distinction between streaming and broadcasting, broadcast television, the distinction is quite artificial. Surely if an amendment is to be made to include streaming, it should be made to the ICASA Act and not the FPD. The FPD shouldn't see that now because there hasn't been an amendment to the ICASA Act. It must now step in and try and usurp ICASA's powers. That amendment should be made to the ICASA Act and not to the FPD.
The last thing I thought I would see, but I want to deal with one particular issue before. I think some of the issues that Honorable Van Dyke raised would be more relevant. Honorable Sheen is the next speaker. But before that, I wanted to deal with one of the issues that you have raised earlier on. I think some of the issues that you are raising will be more relevant when we're going to be engaging with the bill on our own.
Yeah.
And I will appreciate if you don't enter into that stage, the political stage, like the issue of the role of the minister and the whole range of other issues that you raised. I'll appreciate if you don't enter into that stage for now. The bill is now in the hands of the political, the legislature, in this case our first. Some of those issues will then be more relevant when we're going to be dealing with these issues on our own. I think Honorable Pandami appreciates my guidance in that regard. Just to not enter into that space. maybe we also have a legal advisor. She'll come in at some stage just to provide guidance on the process with regard to the public hearing that we seem to be agreeing upon as way forward. Yeah, Honorable Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. I really would like serious consideration being given to qualifying the term independence. Because we're dealing here with basic human rights, the right to communicate, the right to artistic expression, and I think it's essential to actually say that the board, the council and the committee are independent of political and commercial interference. ICASA stresses this in the ICASA Act. It states quite clearly that ICASA is independent of political and commercial interests. And I think it would be appropriate to have the same thing here. I go back to the thing about this. We're talking an awful lot. We're actually premising a lot of our new punitive action on the protection of children and child pornography and the abuse of children. Yet nowhere do we actually say that we're actually going to put on any of these committees, or the committee, on the board, wherever, someone who's actually an expert on children's rights. And that would need to be someone from an NGO or an educationist or someone who actually has in-depth knowledge and relevant expertise in dealing with children's rights. And I think that's the gap there, and I think it must be addressed. We also didn't answer the question about whether the rating of producers, premises, or whoever it is who's producing this porn or unregistered comment will need a court order. I think that it's important to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me begin that train to welcome the report, a clear report, and I'm also covered by the other issues from my colleagues. I'm just trying to support the issue of public participation. It must be a priority. Not far as soon as possible. And also I want to know about these videos, such videos, how do we minimize these videos not to be published in a publication, because there's no interest for them, and there's no education for our kids for these videos.
Okay. Now we want to allow the department to respond. I think as an indicator, deal with only the technical questions and leave political issues to political duties.
Thanks, indeed, Chair. We will leave those the contract to position. I think I'll ask Colin. Colin?
Yes.
I'll ask if you can just give a distinction on the issue of broadcasting and streaming. If you can just respond to that. Then after that, the colleagues from FPP, not the case number, what you also at, with some of the technical issues. I think the issue of the suggestion, which I think there is in the hands of the committee, as you said, Chair, and I think we will be guided by what the committee decides, and we will actually participate in whatever process that you're going to be undertaking going forward, as we've always done in the past. If I can then hand over to you, Dr. Sir, you can just do the issue of the podcasting and the streaming issue.
Thank you. Thank you, DG. Allow me to start with the last issue of the first video. When we were doing the bill, one of the outcomes, Chairperson and member, is that once the bill has been passed, then due to convergence, there's a need for media literacy programs. Media literacy programs are not only going to help children, they're going to help the whole lot of us, because digital convergence caught all of us by surprise. We need skills and skill sets and education in terms of how to deal with it. And this is one of the responsibilities that will emanate from the things that FPP and others will have to carry out to educate the children, the teachers, and everyone in terms of how to interact with these eventualities that we are faced with. So it is one of the considerations and the outcomes of this bill. In terms of the question that came from the two honorable members around video on demand, OTT services, and all of that, I think the spirit that we should take is that when the law was passed, there was no convergence. And because there was no convergence, it was very difficult to differentiate between broadcasting and the internet. What is very clear is that the internet mandate was passed on to the FPP. So all along, as we're defining broadcasting, when we talk about internet broadcasting, we talk about a situation where I'll just sit here and do a video and then post it online. Or I will broadcast from wherever I am on the internet. What the department parallel to this is doing is that review of the broadcasting sector to say, how do you ensure that due to convergence where you find that you no longer broadcast in a linear way, you can also broadcast in a non-linear way. How do you define that? So what has happened is that because FPP deals specifically with matters related to internet, I think the session was trying to differentiate the two. To say, ICASA mainly deals with broadcasting issues that are pure broadcasting in terms of the current definitions, but in terms of online or some that will be seen by content, the better that is felt by a body that is dealing with that one, which would be in that regard the FPP. But we are, remember the ICT policy review process where we are saying that how, with the emergence of internet, and how do you define what is broadcasting as it is now in 2016-16? Is it the same as it was then? So due to that eventuality, we saw, I think that's how the session came about, so that the delineation in terms of what it means. But because of mandate has not been addressed or undermined. And hence, what you found, and which FPP has been reporting on, is that once we realized that there was such eventuality, there's what is called a regulator's forum, where FPP, ICASA, the BCSA, and all those that are dealing with content will seek to say, when there are matters that are overlapping in terms of jurisdiction, how are we going to deal with them as the government or the policymaker is busy preserving the law? And there's that regulator's forum that has been formed by our colleagues to deal with such eventuality. But one thing that is very clear is that we are not going to go against Section 192.
I think I will answer the questions which relate to the issue relating to child pornography. You will remember that when we have our legislation in 1996, we do have a definition of child pornography. Even the amendment thereof, we have it. But that definition was also defined clearly in the Sexual Offences Act, in the Criminal Law Amendment in 2007. And we also have a constitutional court case of Rook, which also defined what is child pornography. And we have there was a decision of an appeal tribunal which ruled against the FPP with regard to the definition of child pornography. So being guided by that, we felt that we must also amend the definition to align it with the constitutional court judgment and also the criminal law amendment. So the definition you see it now, it has been amended based on that guidance. And I think it is upon this committee also to debate further on the definition, because it's not easy to define child pornography, but I think when you debate during your processes,
Thanks,
question before I hand over to Sipo. I think there was a question around the issue about censorship.
Mm.
And I think we need to understand that we've moved away from a regime from FCB when it was a censor board into now a board which has got a mandate to impose classification rather than censor in ethics. But I think the people can add on those, which relates to the issue about when do you stop the derogatory music and all of those things. But I think the point that I'm trying to drive at is that the current policy change that we're in, we are about ensuring that there is a classification, proper classification for certain content that needs to be watched, certain song that needs to be listened to, has to be to conform with norms and values. That's the fact that we want to try and see as well. But that's quite a bit of an interesting thing.
Thank you. Maybe just also to add, I think the FPD has evolved from its days of being a moral watchdog, as it were, under the apartheid regime, to a content classifier. And I think one of the things that the policy strongly advocates is co-regulation, which means a regulation through partnership. So it means, what that means is that we as a regulatory body, we're saying we need to come together with industry and come up with ways to ensure online child protection, for instance, we're dealing with online content. And if it's content that is distributed in physical platforms, that content must be classified. And so now the issue of censorship has not even been clarified. There is prohibited content which cannot be distributed. And this is the same content that is prohibited in terms of Section 62 of the Constitution. It says that freedom of expression will not extend to things like hate speech, propaganda for war, incitement to harm and violence. So now, that being said, if this is prohibited in terms of the physical platforms, the same should apply. So if we're saying that we cannot go around distributing publications and inciting violence and calling people all names, see, what that should also mean that you cannot do the same thing using electronic media. And obviously, as the Freedom of Publication Board, as the agents of that platform, we will deal with you. And I think we're not going to be apologetic kidding insofar as that. There has to be laws. Every state has laws, and those laws must be observed. Maybe while I still have the platform, there was also a question with regards to whether it is our place to be dealing with the revenge part. There's two elements to that. Firstly, the reason why we should deal with revenge porn is we want to protect children against exposure to this type of content, which is our mandate. As you know, and I think you also have seen from experience, that this content is pushed through mediums such as Facebook, Twitter, and children as young as 5, 6, 7 have access to this type of medium. And for that reason, we need to make sure that we punish people who are responsible for the distribution of this content. But secondly, it is important that we also protect the dignity of the person who is being depicted or images publicized. Because as you also appreciate, every right has a limitation. The only right that has no limit is the right to life, but other rights are limited. In the sense that, to the extent that you have a right to expression, your right should not improve upon my right to dignity and not to be subject to degrading and inhuman treatment. So, these are constitutional matters, and I think it falls within our ambit to regulate these matters and ensure that people who are responsible are dealt with without apologizing.
Last picture, I think we will endeavor to provide to the committee the submission feedback on the public engagement that we've had I think we'll make sure the documents available to the committee so that we can take charge of the cost that we're going to take it. Just to be clear, I think we are committed to provide that information. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks. So mine is only to say I think as the colleagues and the officials that not take time, I think we must appreciate the work that has been done by the university. Because these issues were not clear, and the city has always been our concern as the president of the council. Even the conference that we attended, you remember last year, it also dealt with quite a number of these issues, and committee members also contributed a lot in trying to encourage the FPP to arrive at least where they are now. And for me, I think there's quite a lot of work that has been done. We must just appreciate that and make sure I understand about the concerns that we are raising, more especially on other issues like the penalty committee, the role and the powers of the minister. But I think for me, it's the technical work that has been done in trying to assist us that we can take this to the top.
Thank you very much.
Honorable
members and colleagues, I think you have done justice to the issues raised by the honorable member. I think what we are seeing is that we honorable today.
I'm sorry, I didn't have a response on the vision of members of the ethnicity committee. I didn't have a response on that.
Let's deal with that one.
Yes, I think with regard to the vision of the members of the ethnicity committee, the way they are appointed is similar to the way council is being appointed. So they will be subjected also for vetting and the secretary clearance before they can assume their work. So they are not just going to be appointed. Of course, what you also mentioned about the issue of code of conduct also, that also is going to be looked at. Of course, that has been a standard practice on how these members are being appointed.
Thank you very much. I think you have our saying, I think you have indeed you have done justice to the issues faced by the honorable members. And we are agreeing that we are going the route of the public hearing because we are dealing with a very sensitive issue. Which will definitely try to go a long way in addressing a whole range of other issues we have been raised around people abusing the social network space. In the manner that people have been doing. We accept the bill as the portfolio committee and it's up to us to take the process forward. We will, in the next few weeks or so, start with the process, of course, guided by our legal division in terms of how we take the process forward. As we have already indicated, we'll appreciate you can also get that report, DG. Of the input that's made by the stakeholders in the fourth parliament so that they are then able to guide us as we take the process forward. The obviously we then agree or we'll have to agree on the duration of the RPEC as how long should the process take, of course guided by our legal authority. But as we have indicated, we are agreeing that we want to go the route of the public hearing because we are talking about an issue that is very, very sensitive and the public would obviously have an interest in participating, making the necessary inputs and comments and providing guidance until we are able to finalize this particular issue. Okay, thanks very much. I think we will in the next meeting on our
our own as the portfolio committee. Of course, with the assistance of the Secretariat, agree on a program of action in terms of us going to communities and stakeholders to make the necessary input, and then we'll take it from there until we are then able to finalize this particular bill. As I indicated, we appreciate really the work that we have done, the Department of Communications, the Film and Publications Board, and all the people have been working on this particular document. We will release you and remain with one or two issues that concern the portfolio committee. Thanks very much for coming, and once more, thanks very much for the work that you have done, DG and the rest of the team members. Thanks very much.
I'm only talking there at the end, given the entire
Before you do the last question,
I'm very, very happy to be here.